With regard to the second case on the docket, there is one significant factual difference between the Leggett and Otson and Bell's cases, and that is that with regard to the second and third cases, there were deposits into the account of earned funds by Mr. Otson and Mr. Bell's of their earned funds into the trust account. There was a stipulation in the case of Mr. Otson of one such situation, in the case of Mr. Bell's of 12 such situations. However, Ms. Dillon in her investigation identified 200 deposits of earned fees into the account, and it appears to be a pretty close split of 100 by Mr. Otson and 100 by Mr. Bell's of earned fees into the trust account. So that is, in my view, the only additional fact issue that's present in this case that wasn't present in the Leggett matter.
And does the record show that the deposit was put in, the check cleared, and some monies was withdrawn and others were not? Is that what
I think certainly in the stipulated case, and in the others, I believe that's the case, Judge Breckenridge, but it was clear from our investigators looking at the auditing the trust account that some or all monies went in and some were taken out, but some were left in the account. I think it's also important to note that as signatories to this account, the panel, I think, correctly found, while I don't agree with the sanction, the panel found that all three lawyers were, in fact, responsible for that account, and that is clearly what 1.15 provides. And so in this case, I think the same factors apply with regard to Mr. Otson to suggest that some sort of period of probation is in order. The violations as to him, again, just to repeat briefly, are that he failed to withdraw those earned fees from the trust account. They had already deposited earned fees into the account, failed to deliver client funds to clients within a reasonable time, and failed to reconcile or adequately supervise the reconciliation of those bank statements. Here again, I thought I would also just note first of all, let me just opine and give my two cents worth in terms of probation versus reprimand. I look at it from really the back end of the process. If you're reprimanded and you violate reprimand ends the case. If you're reprimanded with requirements, the question is, what becomes of that? Do we have to bring new charges against the attorney? Probation has a set procedure in it where we ask for termination of the probation, and the court has before it the ability to extend the probation, to reprimand the attorney, suspend the attorney, or even disbar the attorney. So the reason I've thought...
Only if something new has occurred.
Correct. I believe if the violation of the probation is something new.
If there's a violation.
Yeah, there is this additional factor that comes into play. I've always looked at that as more serious because of the ramifications of violating the probation could result in a more serious sanction. A reprimand with requirements, and a reprimand obviously ends the case, but with requirements, it's not as clear under Rule 5 what we're to do with that.
Well, but it
situation.
Says, monitoring. Reprimand with requirements does not allow for monitoring.
Right, Judge Smith, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting. The other issue here is that reprimand with requirements specifically in 5.225 says that it's the cases where it doesn't require any monitoring by our office. And for the reasons I suggested in the prior argument,
where you want them to take a class like they did, that kind of thing.
Correct. Although I think even in the Crawford case, one of the requirements, as I recall, the reprimand with requirement, no, that was probation, excuse me, I'm confusing these line cases. But anyway, you're exactly right. I think a reprimand with requirements are just additional things that they need to do. Not necessarily something that we're going to do with regard to those requirements. For the reasons I stated before, I think that a period of probation is appropriate in these cases because this is more than an innocuous violation. This is more than a simple failure to do something. This is, whether you call it negligence, gross negligence, or whatever, it's a violation and with ramifications that were serious and that could have been so easily avoided. So to avoid that type of conduct going forward, we feel like a period of just monitoring the trust account of these three attorneys is appropriate in the case.
Could you refresh my recollection? I believe Mr. Otson testified that he just did not know it was a violation of the rules to deposit the earned fees into the account. Was that the same circumstance with Mr. Bells?
I think both of them, in their briefs and in their testimony, say that they were not aware of that requirement. And that is in line with the other line of cases I've talked about. That seems to be a common denominator in a lot of these cases is, well, I just wasn't aware of that prohibition. And that's fine, perhaps, but the fact is that there's a lot of legal experience among these three attorneys, and I would suggest somebody should have been more on the ball in terms of the requirements of a trust account.
Is this case somewhat unusual in the aggressive way that they immediately took charge of the situation and tried to rectify it, took classes and so forth right at the beginning of the process?
Well, we've had attorneys who, you know, they see where this is headed and they start taking mitigating activity immediately. They absolutely did that, and the court should take account of that, I think. They have rectified and tried to rectify the situation. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it should always be encouraged to try to address the situation that created the charges and the violations to begin with. What I think I'm saying is that's great. We just feel that there's no harm in making sure that this trust account that had this happen to it by this third person.
Well, the harm is their record shows a probation, so that is a harm they feel. They're very proud of their records. Maybe it's a justified harm, but it's something for the court to
balance. Well, there's no harm to them. I mean, there's harm to the public here. I mean, the harm, there's no harm to them. There were violations here.
Right.
They were all signatories to an account that got money stolen from it because they negligently, at least, failed to do what they were required to do under 4-1.15. The harm is to any client money that was in there that got stolen, or even any client money that was in there that got commingled with their earned fees, at least Mr. Otson's and Mr. Bell's earned fees. So I absolutely understand that these are three attorneys with clean records, and I sympathize with that. But nevertheless, our mission statement, if we have one at our office, is what's the necessary action to protect the public and the
Absolutely.
Bar's integrity.
Yeah.
Unless there's any other questions, I'll turn it over to Mr. Baer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, are we discussing both of the cases now?
You're just on your time for the second case. But you can discuss them.
What are we going to do? I want to know if I'm going
to
do that.
You're going to have the option to talk about the last case. And if you want to make a statement like Mr. Pratzel did, that we can consider all your argument as to these cases, that's fine too.
For those who don't know me well, I don't give up very easily.
I don't expect you to, and I'm going to give you the full time that you need.
But you can talk about both now if there's some reason you want to, if it's relevant.
I'll talk about both if I get 30 minutes.
If you combine them, you do.
I mean, it's fine, I think, with Mr. Bells and Mr. Austin. If I talk about them together, that's why I'm asking.
Sure, you're welcome to talk.
I don't think I'll talk for 30 minutes, but I'm happy, if it's okay with Mr. Pratzel, that I speak about both of them.
Sure, you're welcome to do
I'm
that.
I'm just going
to
keep speaking and not give up, because I'm still going to hope that there's four of you sitting up there who are going to decide that Rule 5.33 allows you to give admonitions as opposed to reprimand. Larry, please stand up. Lamar Otson. Larry's a 77-year-old gentleman, or 78, Larry?
8.
Who, this is killing him.
Lamar, 53 years. Been a lawyer 41 years, 67 years.
I take great issue with Mr. Prassel saying there's no harm to these men. Nobody on that bench wants to retire with a blemish from the Supreme Court on their record. That will live with these three gentlemen forever. To say that there is no harm is to not understand what it's like to be an attorney who's practiced for 53 years, who's called me up and cried about this over and over again, who wants nothing more than to set the humiliation aside, to feel like he has value again, and to go on and continue his practice as he has the other 53 years. This is not just harming him, it's killing him. The one thing we know is that no client has been harmed. And I understand that the rules are in place for the public. They're not necessarily in place for the attorneys. I also understand that we're all charged with knowing them. And if this court wants to do something that's actually going to help the public, what it should do, in my humble opinion, is to mandate that at least 1 hour of ethics that are required of us each year be mandatorily taken concerning the rules of professional conduct, whether it be a trust account or another rule. So often, so many of us go to seminar after seminar, CLE after CLE, which is considered to be ethics, and it's nothing about ethics. It's something to fill up your time and to fill up your sheet and to fill up your mandatory reporting. It does nothing to teach us about these rules.
So it's our fault.
Pardon me?
So it's our fault that we have
it. No, it's not your fault. It's our fault because we don't know it. What I'm suggesting is that the court mandate that we learn about it even more by going to things. I have asked so many people, Judge Powell, about this case over the last couple years. I can't even tell you how many lawyers that I respect. They have no idea what the rule means. They don't understand what commingling is. They don't, I'm sorry to tell you that, but they seriously do not. Somebody in their office manages it, their office manager manages it, one of the lawyers takes care of it, somebody else takes care of it, they practice law.
So if you don't understand what the term negligence means and you represent a client in a negligence action, isn't that your responsibility as a lawyer to learn what that term means?
There's a difference. In a lawsuit, we have our MAI in front of us. I'm a trial lawyer. That's what I do for a living. I try cases. Okay? I testify against people in cases. I have testified as an expert. The standard of care is set out in book form for us, but it's what a reasonable attorney in the same or similar circumstances would do. That's so very different from trying to understand what Rule 4-1.15 means, or what the actual term commingling means. We're kidding ourselves if we think everybody knows that. They don't. They should, but they don't.
You're just saying, as a practical matter, people don't understand it until they go to a class that teaches it to them. They don't go to the class because they don't understand it.
They don't go to it. Yes, and what I'm suggesting is those people like myself who do this for a living, we get to learn about it and understand it, but so many people don't. It doesn't excuse what my clients did, doesn't at all. And that wasn't the point of my suggestion. But one other thing I want to talk about, and this is in the brief, and I'll use an example, bear with me, but anyhow, let me finish the one thought. Kelly Dillon made it abundantly clear, not one single client was hurt. That does matter. It really does matter. At this point, these three gentlemen are hurt. And you know, in an amazingly bizarre fashion, I don't stand here today unless the cleaning lady stole $22,500. You realize that? That but for some criminal act, these three gentlemen finish out their career. I'm not standing here. Mr. Pratzel's not here. This all came about by some horrible fate. And yeah, you can say it was caused by their failure to monitor or reconcile the trust account. But the reality of it is we're only here in our legal proximate cause world because somebody stole money from them and their clients. That's how we got here. One last thing about both Mr. Bells and Mr. Hodson. In the brief, you see that Mr. Pratzel says there's 200 violations. I've been trying to think for a long time how to explain this. I haven't really come up with a great answer to it, but I'll do the best I can and try not to laugh at me. About a month ago, my daughter, as Judge Draper knows, I have a lot of daughters. Number four, this was number five out of seven, Your Honor.
Okay.
She and her husband asked me if I could come over to the house and paint the house while they were gone. Okay, they have a six-room house. They gave us a nice little grandson a couple months ago, Thomas Anthony, beautiful second name. I said, sure, I'll do it. And so they left, and so I painted their house. And when they came back, she walked in and she started screaming. She goes, what did you do? I said, what do you mean what I did? I did them all. She goes, that's the wrong color. I said, what are you talking about? She goes, that wall's wrong, that wall's wrong, that wall's wrong, that wall's wrong. The other room's wrong, that one's wrong. They're all wrong. How could you make 24 mistakes in a row? And I said, Anne Marie, I made one mistake. I opened the wrong bucket. The point being, these two gentlemen didn't make 200 mistakes. It's the same mistake. They did one thing. They didn't know it. They did it wrong. It's a violation. They understand that. They didn't know it. But they certainly didn't do 200 separate violations of Rule 4-1.15. They each did one. So in cases like Crawford and Penny, where people are paying their income taxes out of trust accounts, and people are paying Cabela's sporting goods bill out of their trust accounts, and people are paying outside expenses out of their trust accounts and paying themselves out of their trust accounts, they're making mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake, and they're all different. These gentlemen made one mistake. They did not know that you couldn't put an earned fee into the trust account. That's their mistake. And I will end again by asking you, didn't expect that I would cry, but I like these guys. Rule 5.33 provides that nothing in Rule 5 shall be construed as a limitation upon the powers of this court to govern the conduct of its officers, thereby placing an admonition within the power of the court. You have the power to give an admonition. And under these circumstances of neglect, Judge Smith, I grant you that. I guess that's nice of me to grant you that. It should be the other way around, but I understand that, and they understand that too. And you know, it does matter that before information was even issued, that they did all these things. You think they enjoyed this? You think this isn't humiliating? Mr. Pratzel was going to file the informations like 2 days before Christmas. I got an email from him. He said, will you accept service for the information? So it was literally like December 23rd. And I asked him, I said, could you do me a favor? Can you wait? Can you show that much to these three gentlemen to wait until after the first of the year? Which he did. But this has been with them ever since it happened. It's very harmful to them. It's very humiliating for them. They couldn't be any more remorseful. Giving them a reprimand isn't going to help one person in the public, but it's going to put a scar on their professional careers forever. And just that, I guess I don't have you on my side, but maybe you'll change before you write the opinion, but I certainly hope that there's four of you up there who will agree with me and understand that these gentlemen are sorry for what they did. They're not going to do it again. No one was hurt. But please, 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 please allow them to walk on through the rest of their life without this scar on their professional record. Thank you.
Just one point. Mr. Bear almost characterizes this as like an accident, like this is something fell out of the sky and caused these violations, that we wouldn't be here but for this cleaning lady stealing money from the trust account. Understand that if this trust account were being handled appropriately with only client money in it, we'd be up here asking for an actual suspension, multi-year actual suspension, because there'd be client money that's been stolen. The fact that it was their money that they're throwing into the trust account means their money's the money that got stolen. But this is no accident. This is pure negligence at the very least. And again, there's no basis for looking at the harm caused to the attorneys with a clean record. That's a mitigator. It's not something that should mitigate it from a probation or a reprimand to something else. Either
can you have a trust account violation where there's an admonition that should be issued?
Judge Draper, in the case that's cited in their brief that I mentioned, it was a 1988 case where the court did issue an admonition. It's the only situation that we have found where there was ever an admonition issued coming out of this court.
Counsel, I don't think anyone but Mr. Bear has ever cited Rule 5.33 to us, though, which does say that nothing in this Rule 5 shall be construed as a limitation upon the powers of this court to govern the conduct of its officers.
Absolutely. It's there. And you can do what you think is appropriate, notwithstanding the Rule 5 sanction models. That said, I don't think it's appropriate in a case such as this, and I think it would set a precedent where we'd be citing, respondents would be citing the Leggett, Bells, and Otson line of cases forevermore, because their attorney should only be admonished in the future for trust account violations. I think it's inappropriate. I think it doesn't speak to the serious nature of the neglect going on with regard to these three attorneys, and the fact that they were ignoring their trust account for over 3 years. Regardless of the reason, they were the ones responsible for that account. Ferris stands for that, and I think it calls for something more than an admonition in terms of sanction and more than a reprimand. I think it calls for probation. I think we should be monitoring them. But 5.33 is there, and the court can do what it believes is appropriate, notwithstanding the other sanction models of Rule 5. That's correct. Unless there's any other questions, that's all I have.
Thank you. The case will be submitted.